This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Shows on mental illness are often the domain of Tina Carmelia, who produces the Health and Living segment, or Chua Eun Teck of Live and Learn, when policies related to and the societal impact of mental illness are being discussed on the Bigger Picture. But occasionally, the sure and firm set earth moves. So today, on Front Row, we have two people who are not doctors or mental health practitioners talk to us about a device play on mental health. In the studio are the director, Jeremy Ui, and Arif Hamizan, who is one of the six performers in this production titled Remedy. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
EJA Productions, yeah. Third outing, Betrayal, and then Lungs. How old is this company? I know Betrayal was in 2015. Was Lungs the first one?
Lungs was actually the first one, yeah. I think we did that in 2014, so that was like a year before.
So yeah. You're now nearly 3 years old.
Yeah, technically 3 years old, but we've only done like three shows.
What is the focus of EJA Productions?
Okay, it actually started with an exercise. We were given a piece of the script of Lungs to actually perform. When we looked at the script, it was very unique because it was just dialogue. Everything was just dialogue. There's no stage directions, there's no set, there's no costume, there's no light changes. It was very specific in the script that we perform as it is.
Kind of like Shakespeare, right? I mean, there are no stage directions as to who goes out when.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You have to pick up from the lines.
Correct, and it was very contemporary as well. So it's very modern, it's very current. It's a very grounded story about relationships. And we thought, okay, this is interesting. Let's try to do this piece. When we did that exercise, we felt very compelled to do the whole thing because
What do you mean, do the whole thing?
Oh, the exercise only was an extract of the script itself. So it was like maybe about a page long for the exercise. So after we did the exercise, we just decided that, you know what, let's just produce the whole thing perform it. Just stage it, you know, like we felt so drawn to it and we just thought, let's just stage it. Along the way, it sort of evolved into a process where we thought, like, we want to tell stories which are very, very personal, very grounded, and very, how to say, very intimate. Yeah, it's a few characters, you know, probably the stories usually involve, you know, relationship, personal stories, things like that. So, I mean, that's where we want to focus on. So that's how Asia came to be. Yeah.
I mean, I can understand intimate and small simply because they have more actors. The scheduling, the cost, everything like that just goes up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because funny enough, Lungs was written in response to that. It's in response to theatre being expensive to produce. So Lungs was written in a way that, okay, this is a play that can be produced very cost effectively. You know, you don't need a lot of stuff to put on a show. Just two actors and let the story carry through. So we want to emulate that sort of response to theatre being expensive to produce.
Who wrote Lungs?
Duncan McMillan is an English guy, yeah.
As a theatre group, what's your focus? You have mentioned that you want to do smaller productions, intimate productions, dealing with relationships.
Yeah.
Well, I think that all plays are about relationships. Who is your target market or people that you want to draw to your plays?
I would think that people that we want to draw, it's like usually around like the young urban Malaysians, usually maybe 25 to 30-ish kind of people. The thing about these kind of people, and we want to tell these kind of stories as well, is that I think the stories that we pick also relates directly to them. Usually, like for example, Lungs is about having a kid. You know, Betrayal is about couples, you know, having affairs in that sense. They're very close to that age, I think.
So you guys are of that age where you can start having affairs.
We understand the full implication of having affairs, like, in a sense. Like, I think if we were like a few years younger, we probably only get half the story. Like, you know, we probably only understand half of it. But the full impact of it, I think we'll only truly know when we are that age where we can get married, or that age when we know other people who had kids and things like that, yeah.
How many people in your group, those who are performing now, are married?
Oh, I don't think any of them are. I didn't think any of them are married. But they are of the marriage age, you know, like I myself, I'm in a long-term relationship. So, you know, thoughts of that comes to mind as well.
Of marriageable age, but not of marriageable status. Simply because you're actors, right? No money. True, right?
That's true.
No. But going back to performing for people about your age group, do you think that theatre, for the most part, is attended by people of your age group?
Generally, I would think that it takes some convincing. I would say that even though if it's our age group, usually our theatre groups themselves, peers, you know, peers will come to watch. Maybe as an extension of that, we want stories that we want to draw in people that have little to no experience in terms of theatre. So when we explain to people about the shows that we do, they can sort of pick up, oh, okay, this is a story about, you know, having a kid. Okay, let's go watch, you know. This is a story about, you know, going to therapy and what is that like, you know, that kind of thing. Something that I would say the general audience can pick up very quickly.
I guess the way I'm trying to go with this question is, based on your own practices, based on being in the theatre scene, who do you see come to the theatre?
Oh, well, for me, a lot of the time, because we as theatre practitioners don't have much choice, we get schools to come in as well, right? So I see a lot of young, new, fresh students coming in. But I think the main theatre-going crowd would be, I actually don't know. I don't know, just random people who turn up, maybe. Oh.
No, because I try to pay attention to who goes to see a show and what kinds of show people go to. And for the most part, if the performers on stage are of a certain particular age group, then you get that kind of audience, people who are peers to the actors on stage or the performers on stage.
I think the reason why I can't define who comes to the theatre is because I've seen so many different type of people come. People from first time to people who have been going to theatre all their lives. And it's a very mixed bunch, I feel. I think that, I really can't put my finger on it. Can you?
Generally, if you look at the general audience, it's very varied. It's very varied, yeah. I would like to think that we want to bring in new audience that this is my first time watching theatre, those kind of crowds, you know. When we did Lungs and Betrayal, we specifically asked those people, you know, this play is about, you know, 20 plus ringgit. You know, just come and check it out, you know. It's just in a small place, it's a very small investment, and just check it out if you like it, you know. Go to other bigger shows, you know, that kind of thing.
So in some ways that the ticket price also is fixed at a rate that would allow more people to come.
Yeah, that was the intention of Lungs and Betrayal, yeah.
Arif, you are teaching right now, is it at a secondary school?
Yep.
How much exposure do these young people have to theatre?
Well, in the school that I'm teaching in, very little, actually. They do get sent to plays every now and then, but it's because it's a private school. But the other schools which I've come into contact with, they don't really know much about theatre except for what goes on within the school itself. So they have theatre competitions and it's led by the teachers. But in terms of professional theatre makers putting up shows, they don't really get that exposure.
Is it because they don't know, or is that is unimportant to them to see professional theatre?
Well, I think it's quite a large thing. It's probably the fact that the arts in school isn't really that important anyway. There's no emphasis or little emphasis placed on the arts. I remember when I was back in school and I wanted to join the drama team and I was in debate and doing all that. And because it took up a lot of time, a lot of the teachers felt a bit kind of aggrieved that we weren't in class. And this also goes back to the idea that the arts doesn't really have any real tangible effects for us to, you know, KPIs and things like that. So I think that's the main thing, that the emphasis and the understanding of how important it is to a child's development.
But the fact that you are now teaching in a school which traditionally does not expose its students to the arts seems to suggest that there is a change in the attitude.
Well, I'm not teaching the arts, actually, so I'm doing public speaking.
Oh, yeah. Very, very KPI focused.
Well, it's more about making sure that they can write a speech and things like that. So I think the image of theatre that most people might have is, oh, people having fun on stage and we go watch and we go laugh. That's kind of it, yeah.
I'm speaking with Jeremy Ooi, director of Remedy, and Arif Hamizan, who's also acting in it. And after this commercial break, we'll talk about the play itself and what it entails and what exactly is a device play. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng speaking with Jeremy Ooi and Arif Hamizan. Both of them are involved in Remedy, which is a device play. And like many of us, we want to know, what is a device play? What kind of device do you use? That one that you put on the table and squeeze, to torture your actors to get something out of
something
it?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a grinder, yeah. You know, roll it.
The vice as a device, squeeze. Yeah.
Well, okay, a device play. It's basically a play where the actors themselves are part of the process to create the final story. A device play usually starts with a particular vision, but not with any particular form in mind. And through the process of the rehearsals, we sort of develop that form and idea throughout the process.
So since this is a device play, of course, then the question comes up is, did the idea of doing Remedy come first, and Remedy is about mental health issues? Did that come up first, or did you have a bunch of actors and say, okay, what should we do? And then that came out. No chicken or the egg.
I see. Actually, the idea for Remedy came first. We actually had a chat with Dr. Chua.
When you say we...
Oh, sorry, me and Alexis. Yeah, so we had a chat with Dr. Chua, and she was very interested in the idea of putting up a show about mental health, and how do we tie this into, like, you know, the local community, and to reach out to create that sort of awareness. Remedy came out of that discussion because we ourselves as theatre practitioners, we want to try to do shows that really touch on societal issues.
And I thought for a moment you were going to say we as theatre practitioners have mental health issues.
Oh, actually, one way or another, we're all a little bit. Yeah. So we want to try to do a story about that sort of touch on something a bit more social related that people can watch and sort of get a glimpse in terms of what are the problems people are facing on a daily basis, and this came to be. But the direction for Remedy was very specific. It was not about depression or bipolar or anything like that. It's really about therapy itself.
And what does that mean?
That means that you don't have to have a serious mental illness to actually go to therapy. Sometimes daily life itself is hard to cope already. And sometimes we don't accept that. We don't address that ourselves. Sometimes we just feel like, you know, the whole is crashing down on us and nothing of great magnitude is happening to us, like, you know, nobody died, nobody, like, we didn't lose our jobs, but it's just holding on to daily life itself. It's very stressful already, and sometimes that will lead to more serious mental illness like depression and so on and so forth. So the idea is that therapy should always be an option for everyone if we are finding it hard to cope with life. Yeah.
So after having this idea, having had this discussion with Dr. Chua, how did you bring in the performers?
I see. When we had the idea, we thought we planned for 6 performers and let's do a device play about therapy. The performers usually are the ones that we've worked with before, we feel very comfortable with. And as a wider range in terms of perspective, it ranges from the very young to the older one. I think the youngest was...
me.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm the very young here.
Oh, I see. I thought you and Nabil are around the same
age. Oh, Nabil's older than
No,
me.
Nabil is older than he is.
I see, yeah.
They look the same.
Yeah, I think, so from the young to the old. So it gives some of a different perspective in terms of what kind of issues that we face on a daily basis. And it actually came out, like, some things are overlapping, some things we all find difficult together, some things that some of a younger age would see differently, some of our older age would see differently as well.
So on the first day of getting together, Arif, what happened?
First day, we talked about ourselves. It was actually very interesting because in some way, we do know of each other in theatre, and we've even worked with each other. But Jeremy insisted, let's introduce ourselves to each other. And for me, that was a bit strange because I felt that everyone already knew each other, everyone knew me. But
they only know the performer.
Yes, that was the difference. And it was also very interesting to see how much we were willing to reveal about ourselves on the first day. Before we came in for the performance, for the first meeting, actually, we had already been sent for therapy.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Fascinating, but what did that mean?
Okay, so because we're working with Dr. Chua, all the actors have undergone therapy as well. So we've had a session.
Had a session with her.
Yeah, with her. And that was to be used as a spring point for our understanding of therapy to be taken into the rehearsal space. So that experience was amazing. It was the first time I had been to therapy.
Well, I'm not asking you to reveal what you spoke to her about. What was the session? I mean, what kinds of questions were being asked of you?
I went in there with no expectations. I didn't know what was going to happen. And the first thing she said, which kind of took me by surprise, was, well, what do you want to talk about? And I was thinking in my mind, aren't you supposed to tell me? Aren't you supposed to therapize me?
You called me for this.
Yeah,
meeting,
exactly.
Right?
Yes. Yes. So what it became was that really the person going through therapy has the choice to talk about whatever's bothering them. She asked me, so what has been a major feature of your life recently? And from that, we start discussing things and you start finding out what really matters to you. Yeah, finding out about yourself, finding out what makes you safe and having her push you in the right direction.
You felt pushed.
I felt challenged, but in a very uplifting emotional way. Yes.
So how from this discussion did, then I guess the next step was having everybody together to generate stories from which you can perform.
I see. So we started with some improv sessions and also some guides as like sources. Like for example, okay, in this particular emotion, how would you approach this as a performance? So we start from there first. We use the therapy sessions that the actors go through as a springboard as well for the kind of stories that we want to touch on. Find the common themes among them and also use that as anchors for the process itself. So when we do improv, we always say, okay, you know what? Let's use this emotion, anger. Let's use this as a springboard. Let's try to tell a story with anger through an improv or through a composition or through like as simple as writing a story or write a poem or write a song, you know, that kind of thing. The recorded therapy sessions, that's our base. And then we just take it from there.
Because this is being devised and with six different actors, I don't know whether, Jeremy, you had to tell a story where they had to perform. Is this going to integrate into one story with six different characters or more? Mm. Or is this six or however many anecdotes strung together?
So what we ended up with was with a single protagonist and we followed his journey. But the thing about his journey is that it's sort of like an amalgamation of all the stories that we've devised throughout the rehearsal process. The other actors would serve a role in terms of telling his story. I don't want to reveal too much, but it's more like sort of to help him in terms of expressing the particular emotions that he's facing or the particular
challenges,
thoughts in his mind. Yes. So the other actors would sort of act as a sort of conduit for his inner thoughts and inner feelings. Mm. Yeah.
Generally, what's the plot line then?
The character, his name is Michael, is going through a therapy session and he walks in and he meets the therapist.
Who is Michael?
Michael is the protagonist.
Yeah, yeah, yes. But who is playing Michael?
That Michael is Alfred Lowe.
Ah, okay.
Yes. And he meets the therapist and he begins and over the course of... actually, we've got it to almost exactly how long a therapy session usually lasts. So about 50 minutes to an hour. We see him answer the questions that the therapist is asking of him and answer questions that he himself has been avoiding. And by the end of it, well, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So already based on what you're telling me, this is what I'm seeing in
sure.
my head. This character, Michael, is in a therapy session with his counselor. And as part of the talking, I guess the talking becomes enacted
yes.
by the actors.
Yes.
I would assume for a young company, and in particular for you, Jeremy, this
yeah.
is your debut as a director.
Yes.
Why choose something that has so many variables as opposed to using a proven text like Betrayal?
Mm.
Something that's been done many years ago, but it's still relevant and it still resonates with the young people that you're performing for.
Mm.
Why choose something where, like I say, so many variables? One, you're not sure of the story, you have to kind of work it out.
Yeah, it's growing pains for me because it's like you have to resist, you know, you have to like let the story come out, let the story unravel through the rehearsal process. I would say that it's really based on circumstances. Like we've actually talked about, me, Alexis talked about it. Should we use a script to tell this kind of story? Should we devise it? Should we write our own story? I think the general consensus is that it would be more interesting if we allow more perspective on it, like as opposed to like a particular script and everything. And also the subject matter is it's very complex. It's something that I would say it would serve us better if we allow those normalcy to come out of it for everyday life. And therefore, we chose the device process for that. There is a lot of variables, I would say, and it is my first device piece to direct as well. And it's very, I would say it's very challenging, but I think the actors all helped in that sense. Like they understood what the story is about. They understood the purpose of it, and everyone had a hand in making it work.
How would you describe this world on stage? Is it performed very realistically, or because it's in a therapy session and the other actors are playing out what's in the mind of this Michael who's having his therapy? Is this not realistic, not naturalistic?
There are definitely bits of both. On the one hand, I think there was a concerted effort to make sure that people could feel like they were watching a therapy session, not as voyeurs, as Jeremy's mentioned, but as part of the therapy session. So they are the furniture, you know, they are allowed to see what goes on. And at the same time, there are breaks from that where we get to really see how, say, memory can distort your images of people, how the ideas that you've held for so long are actually not really that strongly built.
Or some would say memory is all constructed.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
What role did Alexis play in this production, since she herself was a graduate in a degree that allowed her to kind of work theatre and psychology together?
Alexis actually plays a very big part. She's actually friends with Dr. Chua, and she understands the therapy part the most out of it. So if there's anything related to therapy, like what a therapist would say, how would a therapist behave, I rely heavily on her for that. I would like the voice of the therapist to be as true as possible. I think that is very, very important because what the therapist says would drive the character Michael. And also, if you were to go to a therapy session, that will spearhead you towards the conclusion that you can come to in the end. So Alexis, she consults on the voice of the therapist, and also she actually wrote some of the lines that Michael would actually say. The conversation between Michael and the therapist are mostly written by her. Yeah, 95%, yeah.
Throughout this process of devising the play, beyond Alexis's input, how often did Dr. Chua get involved with you guys?
She was involved in the... Because we sent all the actors, and even ourselves included, we just attend one session just to see how it's like. So that's how Dr. Chua... she just allows the session to happen naturally. So that's our reference point. And then we do consult her from now and then. Like, for example, would the therapist say this? How would you approach a person like this? If they were to dodge question, how would you bob and weave into getting the answer out? Or would you just let it go? You know, that kind of thing. Whatever that the therapist would do and say, we try to emulate that as close as possible. And that's where Alexis and Dr. Shaw came in.
At what point during your devising did you finally say, okay, now we have the story?
We did a lot of compositions, we did a lot of improv, and we did a lot of
discussions.
And we just sometimes we just sat down and we just shared, you know. We allow ourselves to ask each other questions, you know. We put one person on the spot, you know, on a chair, and we just ask them questions and see how they respond. So after doing all of that, and we felt that we have enough material, so Alexis actually wrote a story based on that. Yeah.
So you finally had somebody who kind of put words down on a piece of paper.
Correct.
You go memorize your lines and then we'll do the thing.
Yeah, because we want to really extract the therapy session as realistic as possible. And that was very important. To have lines written for those parts, I think it's very, very, very... We shouldn't discount that. I think that is something that I want people to take away and see that, oh, so this is what happens inside a therapy session. The realistic part anyways, yeah.
At the end, after watching this, what is the takeaway, you think, for the audience?
I think coming from my experiences with people who have dealt with, say, depression, you know, family and friends, the idea of therapy is always something which isn't at the forefront of people's minds. It's usually, you know, other people go to therapy, but we're okay, I can still manage. It's always about still managing. And I think that I would love for the play by the end to have given the option to people to take therapy seriously, not as a last resort, as something which is a continuous process, as something which you can just drop in and just and kind of let yourself feel the things that you need to feel so that you can manage rather than managing by yourself. Because it is there and it is very useful. And I can say that because I've been through it once because of Jeremy. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah.
Are there enough therapists in town for people to go walk in and have a session?
That's not
necessarily walk in, but, you know, make an appointment and have a session.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons I think we don't talk about therapy very much or we don't hear very much about it stems from the fact that it is not that a reluctance, but we don't even know such a service is available.
Yeah, correct. I would say only a handful because, like, if let's say, for example, after this play and people decide that, you know, okay, therapy is an option, I think the other problem would be, like, accessibility. Like, how many therapists are there in Malaysia? How far are they? You know, some of them are scattered throughout different parts of, not just KL, but different states as well. And sometimes you have to take a long drive just to see one. I would say they are not cheap as well because it's, you know, being Asian, being in Malaysia as well, you know, our economy and things like that. It's a serious consideration to take therapy. It's a real cost issue.
We don't have to pay in US dollars, right?
Yeah, we don't have to, but
I would say that for my age group, because I just graduated, so most universities do have a counseling unit and they do have therapists and they're usually free as well. And some of my friends did advise me to try it out, but for some reason, I wouldn't. Even though it was there, it was free, I just didn't want to go. And I think this rehearsal process really changed my mind on a lot of things, and I hope, yeah.
I always thought that those who are in the university and institutions tend to be counselors in the context of, okay, what's your next step as, not as a human being, but in your career.
Right. Well, actually, the university I went to, they do have their own therapy unit where they have therapists who deal with
emotional and mental health.
Yep.
Mm.
Who are the other performers in this group?
Okay, so there is Alfred Low, Sandy Chu, Nabil Zakaria, Esther Liu, and Amanda Ang, and Arif Amizan.
Well, thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, the device play, Remedy, is a play about therapy, and it opens this Thursday, March 16th, and runs till Sunday, March 19th at the Damansara Performing Arts Centre's Black Box. Shows in the evenings are at 8:30 p.m. except for Sunday at 3 p.m. and tickets are priced at $45. However, Wednesday, March 15th, that is tomorrow, is a preview night and tickets are RM25. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture. Now Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.